This is WBUR's All Things Considered. I'm Lisa Mullins. It's become almost routine to hear about people who've been convicted of a crime being set free because they're actually innocent. About 2,000 convicts have been exonerated in the past few decades in the U.S. But long before DNA testing and other high-tech forensics helped prosecutors and police get it right, there was a prosecutor in Connecticut who used only his conscience and plain old detective work to protect an innocent man. And it wasn't the last time the lives of the two men converged. It all started with the murder of a Catholic priest on a crowded street. The murder happened almost a century ago, but the criminal case was so spectacular that years later, Hollywood made a movie out of it. It's called Boomerang. The story begins in Bridgeport, Connecticut, on February 4th, 1924. World War I was over, and life was good in the city. People braved the winter chill that night to enjoy dinner out or to take in a show at one of the grand theaters. At 7:45, actress Ethel Barrymore was taking the stage downtown. Buster Keaton was performing a few streets over. And a real-life drama was about to play out in Bridgeport, one that would shake the city to its core. A Catholic priest stepped out for his nightly stroll.
A man known and loved by all. You might find him almost any evening on Main Street taking his constitutional after supper.
His name was Hubert Dahme. He was 56 years old, born in Germany. He'd been the beloved pastor at St. Joseph's Church in Bridgeport for 23 years.
Hello, Father.
Hello, my dear.
As Father Dahme walked along Main Street, a man approached him from behind. He pointed a revolver by the priest's ear, fired a single shot, and then fled.
Hey, stop that man! Stop him! Grab him! Grab him!
No one could grab him. Father Dahme died at the hospital within hours. Nuns and priests were in the hallways in tears. Meanwhile, the manhunt began. Bridgeport police were under intense pressure from the public and press to find the killer. 1 week after the murder, an officer in a nearby town noticed a young man he thought was acting strangely. The man was Harold Israel from rural Pottsville, Pennsylvania. He was a wispy 20-year-old, barely over 5 feet tall. He'd been honorably discharged from the Army a few months before. Israel had been staying in a Bridgeport boarding house where he met up with some Army buddies. He didn't own much, but he did have a gun on him. It had five chambers. Four of them were loaded. One bullet had been fired. Police booked Harold Israel on gun charges. Then Bridgeport cops interrogated him about the murder of Father Dahme. They pelted him with questions for 28 hours. Israel insisted he had nothing to do with the crime. Here's how the film Boomerang portrayed it.
What are you trying to do to me?
Why do you keep lying, son? You can't get away with anything.
You're crazy.
Let's talk about the gun again.
Finally, Israel confessed. He was charged with first-degree murder. They could hang you for that. The young veteran became public enemy number one. Police investigation turned up people who witnessed the shooting and some who saw the gunman run away. They described the shooter's dark overcoat and gray cap. That sounded a little like the suspect, Harold Israel's clothes. Some of the witnesses identified Israel as the killer when police brought him to the station. And a ballistics engineer told police the bullet that killed the priest came from Harold Israel's revolver. The evidence was presented to the chief prosecutor for the county, Homer Cummings. Homer Cummings was a man of great prominence. He'd been mayor of Stamford, Connecticut, three times and chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Cummings was 54 years old. He was an imposing man, 6'2". He was Ivy League, educated at Yale. On May 27, 1924, more than 3 months after the priest was murdered, there was a court hearing. Prosecutor Cummings took his place before the judge. It seemed all of Bridgeport was watching.
Be seated, please.
Homer Cummings spoke for about 90 minutes, no notes. Actor Dana Andrews played the prosecutor in the film.
The evidence against the accused seemed overwhelming. On its face, at least, it seemed like a well-nigh perfect case.
But maybe it wasn't. Some people wondered if the suspect, Harold Israel, was a victim of circumstance. Prosecutor Cummings had felt compelled to conduct his own investigation. That day in court, even though he was the lawyer in charge of prosecuting the case, he methodically addressed each scrap of evidence and tore it to shreds. Cummings had gone to the scene of the crime in the dark of night. He concluded that people who saw the killer could not have identified him running away in such dim light. What's more, Cummings had hired 6 ballistics experts. They told him that the bullet that killed Father Dahme could not have come from the gun found on the accused, Harold Israel. The marks on the bullet just weren't right. And what about the fact that Israel confessed to the crime? Well, doctors who examined Israel claimed the police interrogation left the young suspect too exhausted to say anything reliable, that he only wanted to get some sleep. In fact, once Israel did get rest, he again insisted he was innocent. And that's what Prosecutor Cummings concluded. Harold Israel was not the killer.
It is just as important for the state's attorney to use the great powers of his office to protect the innocent as it is to convict the guilty.
Charges dropped, case closed. The prosecutor had defended the suspect. That was extraordinary then. It's extraordinary now. Prosecutors are under pressure to get convictions, and the innocent have been put in prison for life. Homer Cummings was celebrated for resisting the pressure to convict. Future Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter told Cummings that the case would live in the annals as a standard by which prosecutors would be judged. Harold Israel wasn't in court the day his life was spared. When he was told he'd be set free, he said, "That's good. It came out right." That's where the case that's taught in law schools today ends. And that's where the movie Boomerang ends. But there's another chapter to the story. This one's personal. Harold Israel, the former suspect and Army vet, headed home to Pennsylvania to find a job. Meanwhile, Prosecutor Homer Cummings' star kept rising. In 1933, President Franklin Roosevelt tapped Cummings as U.S. Attorney General. Cummings built up the FBI and fought organized crime. When he retired from the government, Cummings went back to practice law at the 2 firms he founded. A couple of years went by, and then the former prosecutor received a letter. It was from someone he likely thought he'd never encounter again, the man he saved from the gallows, Harold Israel.
"I guess you think that I have the nerve to write to you for what you have did for me. But you see, I have to write to someone. I'm out of work about 3 years, and it looks like I can't get any work down here because everywhere I go, they say no. So I don't know what to do."
He signed it.
"Your friend, Harold Israel."
Homer Cummings wrote back within a week. He was kind, but said he wasn't sure how he could help. Then 5 more years passed, and Hollywood came calling. It was 1946. The producers of Boomerang wanted to know where Harold Israel had ended up. So Cummings asked FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover to investigate. Hoover reported back. Israel, the one-time murder suspect, had become a family man, a hard worker and a trustee in his church in the village of Gilberton, Pennsylvania. Cummings welcomed the news. Then he urged the filmmakers to depict Harold Israel as a respectable man, not as a penniless tramp, the way Israel had been portrayed in a magazine article that led to the film. And the former prosecutor negotiated with the producers to pay Israel $18,000 for the rights to his story. That would be about $250,000 today. A nice take for a coal worker raising a family in a small town. Gilberton was a company town, a coal company that owned most of the land in the village. Harold Israel worked at the coal yard 7 days a week, for a sum of $60. He lived in a simple duplex on an unpaved road. Some of Israel's descendants still live nearby. We went to Gilberton to meet them at the home of Israel's granddaughter, Darlene Friel.
"Hi, I'm Lisa. How are you?"
"Good, how are you?"
"Okay."
We brought something we knew the Israel descendants would want to see. Transcripts of letters we learned about while researching the story. The letters had gone back and forth from the Israel family in Pennsylvania to the grand East Coast home of Attorney Cummings. The Israel grandkids knew the letters existed, but they'd never read them. The first letter was written by their grandmother, Olive, that's Harold Israel's wife. She had written to the former prosecutor, Homer Cummings, to thank him for securing the money from the film. Lisa, do you want to read this?
"We can't begin to thank you enough for what you have done for us."
Lisa Berrier is one of the Israel grandchildren.
"I keep asking my husband, are you sure it is true? He just laughs at me and says, sure it is. To him, Homer Cummings, you are next to God. He worships you. He said he would trust you more than anybody in this world." Typical of my gram. That's why I started crying.
Berrier and the rest of the Israel family have always known about their grandfather Harold's brush with the law, but not from him. Here's Israel's granddaughter, Darlene Friel.
It was always Graham.
Yeah.
He never talked about that. I think that was one part of his life that he didn't want to dwell on or think of. He just wanted to get on with his life and enjoy his family and everything.
As the years went by, there were many more letters between Olive Israel and Homer Cummings, 10 years worth. Olive, or Graham, often asked the former prosecutor for advice. In one letter, she wondered if she and Harold were spending their movie payout too lavishly. They'd bought a used Chevy, planned to put a bathroom inside the house, and each get a new set of teeth. Homer Cummings wrote her back.
I note the description of the expenditures you're making, and it seems to me that they are entirely justified. I hope that you and your family will derive great comfort and happiness from these expenditures.
The correspondence continued.
We've built an extra room on our home. We use our home a good deal. The boys love to read funny books and play records, so this room will be used real hard.
Mrs. Cummings and I returned from Palm Beach on the 12th of June. We had quite a long stay there and enjoyed the vacation very much indeed.
The former prosecutor, Homer Cummings, had a small family. He'd married four times, he became a widower twice, and divorced twice. He had just one grandson, but the dynamics of divorce kept the Cummings family members distant. Meanwhile, Cummings' relationship with the Israels grew warmer. He sent gifts to the Israel home in Pennsylvania, pearls and perfumes for Olive, a set of lamps for the house, baby clothes his wife knit for the Israel grandchildren.
You're getting together quite a family, and I hope that happiness and content follow you all the days of your life.
That family is grateful to Homer Cummings to this day, first for his courage in the courtroom, and then for his kindness. Olive Israel used to remind her grandkids they wouldn't be here if the prosecutor hadn't done what he did, eviscerate the prosecution's own case, and exonerate their grandfather. Harold Israel's granddaughter, Darlene Friel.
Cummings had a good heart for how he treated my grandfather and tried to protect him.
Homer Cummings wrote his last letter to the Israels in 1956, 32 years after he and Harold met following the murder. 2 months later, Cummings died at the age of 86. There's a list of dozens of people who sent flowers to the Cummings funeral. Among them, a Supreme Court justice, a college president, an ambassador, and Mr. and Mrs. Harold Israel, Gilberton, Pennsylvania. A final thank you from the one-time murder defendant to the prosecutor who saved his life. Harold Israel died 8 years later of black lung disease, the scourge of the coal worker. He was 60 years old. The man who murdered Father Dahme was never caught. Today, Connecticut authorities say that's a tragedy, but not as great a tragedy as convicting the wrong man. I'm Lisa Mullins. Our story was produced by Lynn Joliger. Our partner in the story was reporter Ken Armstrong at the Marshall Project. That's a nonprofit news organization that reports on the criminal justice system. For a link to the Marshall Project story about Homer Cummings and Harold Israel, go to our website, WBUR.org. And you can also find the story in the current issue of Smithsonian Magazine. And look for photographs and reflections from the descendants of the two men and other people tied to the story. Again, that's at WBUR.org.